Dangerous Knowledge, written by Sylvia, read by Opal Song. A fandom, the sleuth of the Ming Dynasty. Rating, mature. Relationship, Sui Chou, Tang Fan, Wang Shi. Also tagged for polyamory, established relationship, established Sui Chou Tang Fan, UST, first steps, unexpected realizations, teamwork, BAMF, Sui Chou, BAMF, Wang Shi, PTSD, noodles, and OT3. Chapter 1. When the thugs drag Wang Shi out into the courtyard, Sui Chou assumes that's who they're here for. Sui Chou hasn't been involved in anything that could lead to gangs of armed men breaking into his house, and to his knowledge, the most exciting cases Tang Fan has been investigating recently are the disappearance of a tailor's favorite hen and a neighborly dispute about plum trees. Somebody, Sui Chou assumes, must have followed him and Wang Shi when they made their way here. Wang Shi's thick covering of mud from his fall into the potter's pit, an insufficient disguise from the spies of whatever enemy was waiting for his chance. Wang Shi has finished his bath and shed his coating of mud, but his hair is still wet and falling in loose tangles around his shoulders and down his back. He's barefoot, wearing only white underpants and an underrobe that does not fit him. Sui Chou's? And hangs open about his chest. His face is completely blank, locked into slightly sullen impassivity that, to Sui Chou, looks like he's plotting the slow, painful death of everyone in the courtyard. Sui Chou thinks, with the cold, detached focus of combat, that he will be able to use the distraction of Wang Shi's death to free himself from the grip of the men holding him on his knees. These people are no more than thugs. The way they have positioned themselves around the yard is far from ideal, and their leader is the only one with a military posture. Most of them are armed with knives only. Of course, Sui Chou is not armed at all right now, but one of the men behind him has a sword and is holding it at Sui Chou's throat, conveniently within reach. And once he has a sword, once he is free and has a sword, he will kill them all. And he knows, with a tangled rush of steel-cold emotion that rises into his throat to choke him like blood, that he will never forgive Wang Shi for being careless enough to get himself killed like this by a band of common thugs, barefoot and with his hair undone, in Sui Chou's house in front of Sui Chou. But then the thug manhandling Wang Shi laughs, pulling him up short in the middle of the courtyard and turning him to face the gang's leader. His hand is clenched around the back of Wang Shi's neck, as though he's holding an unruly puppy. He even shakes him a little.
"Look what I found in Bai Hu Sui's bedroom. It's a boy!"
Wang Shi offers no resistance, obligingly moving where he is pushed. His expression is closed tighter than the gates of the inner palace. Suezhou is the one who blinks because it's a boy. A dizzying wave of relief washes over him a split second later. Whoever these people are, they have no idea who Wangsha is. They are here for Suezhou. They are still a danger to them both, of course. And if Tang Fan comes home now, the situation will get even worse. And yet, he is relieved. Because now there is a chance that Suezhou will not have to watch Wangsha die this day. The thugs break into jeers and lewd suggestions, jumping straight to the most obvious and, at the same time, most utterly wrong explanation for Wangsha's presence. It's fortunate Wangsha was able to get partially dressed. Even these men would probably have thought a bit further if they'd realized the boy they'd found was a eunuch. Even as it is, Suezhou cannot help but feel they are inexcusable fools for looking at Wangsha of all people and seeing a harmless bedwarmer. Yes, Wangsha is half naked, his hair is indecent, and Suezhou's borrowed robe is now threatening to slide from one of his shoulders. But it isn't the dragon embroidered robes of office that make him a man to be reckoned with, and the calculating sharpness of his gaze is exactly the same as ever. An opponent who assessed Suezhou with that kind of steely, assured patience, that was an opponent he would take very seriously, regardless of their state of dress or how young and attractive they might be. Who'd have thought? The thug's leader is a large, athletic man, with a nose flattened by many fights, chest broad as a barrel and banded with muscle. His clothing is a cut above his men's in quality, but just as bare of seals or insignia. His sword is of middling quality, but not military issue. A mercenary, a gang leader, or someone's private enforcer? Our strict and haughty Baihu is neglecting his duties to run home and fuck pretty boys in the middle of the day. Not such a paragon of virtue after all, are we? Whoever he is, he now steps forward and looks Wangsha up and down, leering demonstratively. Behind him, Wangsha lifts his gaze to Suezhou and raises his brows the slightest fraction. So he doesn't know who sent these men either. Not surprising, really, considering it's becoming more and more obvious they hold some kind of grudge against Suezhou, even if he's never seen them before. What do you want? Suezhou asks again, only to be summarily ignored, just as before. The blade at his neck presses closer, nicking his skin, and the men holding him on his knees twist his arms a little bit higher on his back. A little old, maybe. The leader chuckles and reaches out to grip the second most dangerous man in the empire by the chin and lift up his face. Suezhou jerks a little at the wild audacity of it and has to stifle a gasp as he wrenches his arms. He does have a lovely mouth, though. What's your name, pretty boy? Wangsha narrows his eyes at the man, cold and deadly as winter in the steppe. What's yours? And in that moment, to his horror, Suezhou realizes that the idiot thug is right about something, after all. Wangsha does have a lovely mouth. The type of mouth seen on every idealized portrait of fabled beauties, sweet and full and rosebud-shaped. This was not something he needed to know about the commander of the Western Depot. Suezhou is a great believer in the strategic restriction of knowledge, and this is dangerous knowledge that he did not need. Head thug chuckles again. He turns a bit more to the side, giving Suezhou a grin full of malice as he slowly and deliberately rubs his thumb over Wangsha's lower lip. Wangsha does not react, does not move at all, frozen into waiting stillness. You like them spirited, huh? Suezhou does like them spirited, What he does not like is the speculative glint in the thug's eye. The situation is now well on its way to becoming the kind of horror worthy of joining the slaughter and devastation in his nightmares. Wangsha will not break. He knows that. Not for something like this. Not for anything this man could possibly do. But Suizhou, he has nothing to do with this. There is too much venom in his voice, but there's nothing he can do to stop it. Lock him up in the house and we can talk. It's a strategic error. He knows it as soon as the words leave his mouth. The look of disgust Wangsha levels at him is subtle but scorching. And Suizhou wants to swallow everything back down when it's already far too late. And the thug is watching him with a cruel, knowing smirk. But then how would I get you to behave, huh? And besides, your little whore is so nice to look at. He turns back to Wangsha, thumbing his lip again, more slowly. I want to keep him around. In fact, you know what? I want to watch this pretty mouth suck someone. Who it'll be? Well, that's up to you, Bai Husui. He doesn't know what to do. His heart skips into a panicked rush, and he fights for breath as his blood turns to shards of ice. This is going terribly wrong, and he doesn't know how to stop it, how to protect. Wangsha should not have to endure this. Nobody should. He's bright and sharp and cunning, but he can be hurt just as easily as anyone. And Suizhou, it's his job to protect him. He wants to. It's up to him. But he doesn't know how. Desperation claws at his guts, tearing him open, spilling him out onto black and rotten ground. Bloodied bodies and abandoned swords and the reek of the battlefield rise all around him. Nausea climbs his throat as he struggles to breathe without gagging on the stench of death. And Wangsha, Suizhou can't protect him. He can't protect anyone. Not when it truly counts. Wangsha makes an odd, quiet sound and drops straight to the ground, right out of the thug's grip. Suizhou's head is swimming so badly he can hardly focus. The air thin and cold in his lungs. The wrenching pain in his arms almost too distant to notice. What? Something's happening. He needs to. Wangsha, he has to protect. Something is happening. Wangsha is crawling across the courtyard on his hands and knees, the open robe dragging across the dirt. His gaze is locked on Suizhou with fierce focus, and something is wrong with his expression. Suizhou can't really focus right now, but if he didn't know better, he'd almost think that he looks worried. By the time Wangsha is in front of him, Suizhou can breathe again. The darkness creeping at the edges of his vision is receding. Nobody has tried to stop Wangsha, and when Suizhou tears his eyes away from him for a second, he finds the thug's leader openly ogling his ass. Nobody tries to stop Wangsha, even when he reaches Suizhou and curls into him, pressing his face into Suizhou's neck. His damp hair is cool against Suizhou's cheek, his breath hot on his throat. Suizhou's heart skips another beat. But this time, the reason his breath comes shorter is just confusion. And maybe the fact that he's never been this close to Wangsha, or to anyone he wasn't sleeping with. Without thinking at all, Suizhou tries to put an arm around Wangsha. But of course, the thugs behind him don't let him. Wangsha puts his arms around him instead, draped lightly over the thug's hold. The sword at Suizhou's throat is gone. He doesn't remember when it was taken away. He also doesn't know what his part in this is meant to be, so he does nothing and holds himself ready.
Looks like our little whore has a preference, the thug's leader drawls. All right then, let's start there. I'm not a bad guy, you know.
If he says anything more, Suizhou misses it. because Wangsha is shivering a little. It's the cold. Winter has yet to give way to spring, and it's nowhere near warm enough to be outside in underwear. Wangsha's exposed nipples are drawn to tiny pink points, and Soejo stares at them for far too long and knows it. Can only hope Wangsha doesn't care. It fits into the show he's putting on anyway. He smells like Tong Fan's bath salts and the herbs Soejo packs between his robes to keep away insects, and something more subtle and more alluring. And that's when, with the worst possible timing in the world, Soejo realizes that the low thrum of heat awakened in his belly is not the result of the situation and an attractive young man practically rubbing himself against him. It doesn't even have that much to do with Wangsha's lovely mouth and handsome face, or his moon-pale, sleekly muscled body. It's that it's Wangsha, that Soejo knows he has a plan, and that the cool, narrow-eyed look he gave the thug's leader earlier was akin to a death sentence. And that nobody in this courtyard is as dangerous as he. Nobody in this city, perhaps. Nobody in this whole damn country. Soejo has always admired competence. Wangsha draws back a little so he can climb into Soejo's lap, facing him and straddling his legs. He catches Soejo's eyes, flicks his gaze down, imperious, and order. And Soejo realizes that there is a hardness pressing against the outside of his leg that definitely should not be there. A knife. There is a knife strapped to Wangsha's inner thigh. His head clears immediately. A moment later, when Wangsha does something that makes the thug behind him bellow and release Soejo's sword arm, Soejo is ready. The knife slides into his hand eagerly, as though they'd practiced this, and the second thug falls back with a gurgling cry, blood spurting from beneath the hand he has pressed to his throat. The memory of warmth and soft skin lingers on Soejo's fingertips long after he has abandoned the knife for a sword. Even when the courtyard has fallen silent again in the aftermath of the clashing weapons and hoarse cries of battle.